Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Geek Roulette Podcast. I'm still using this sing-song cadence, yeah! Hey, what's up? I'm Mike Spragle.
Hello, everybody. Hi.
That's
I'm John Lundquist. I'm not going to use a sing-song cadence. I'm going to use just regular cadence.
That's a weird word, cadence.
It is. It's not one of those words you get to use very often, and, you know, I'm okay with that.
I often get told by, you know, and this may shock you, John, by coworkers and people I know, that I perhaps use a lot of overly elaborate and complex words that don't ever need
that
to be used.
That is bullshit. I will not believe that.
Yeah, weird. Mike's really getting super talky-talky about certain things. I don't understand that. Meanwhile, listeners of this podcast that, you know, don't know me in real life, they're like, yeah, you're kind of a little too wordy at times. Maybe you should have a nice glass to shut the heck up.
Yeah, you know, he's tried it.
I've tried.
He didn't like it.
It's the cherry flavor. Not as much of a fan of cherry flavor.
Cherry's the bomb. You need to just check yourself or something.
The only thing worse than that cherry-flavored beverages is, oh, I don't know, chunky peanut butter.
You son of a bitch.
Yeah, you've met my mom.
Yeah, accurate.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for joining us in this episode. You're probably wondering, where's this all going? It just took a weird turn. But this episode, we are going to discuss the third in the trilogy of the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies, Spider-Man No Way Home. We'll talk about things we liked. We talk about things that were odd. We'll talk about movies. Yeah, we'll do that. It'll be fun. But before we do that, hey, I know, let's do housekeeping. Hey, we got Facebook and we got Twitter, and I should probably put us on TikTok, and heck, I should make a Discord page. I mean, I already have a Discord page that we use, you know, for video purposes on here. Like, we could say, we'll do a live event and you can join us, and then I have to mute everybody because everybody's too talky-talk-talk. But we got those things, so do that and rate and review us based on how well you think this podcast is going. Sounds like a 5-star effort out of us today.
Oh, hell yes it is.
Oh, man.
Not our usual 4.5-star crap.
We are killing it. Oh, man. I don't know what else we could do to make this even better. Well, I do. Let's talk about recommendations, John. Let's talk about the things that we have been enjoying lately. Why don't you go first?
Hot diggity. And this time it's even like a recommendation that's like not something that I've recommended before or whatever. I have consumed new media. Well, new media for me, it's technically kind of old. I have been watching the show called Taskmaster. You can find it on YouTube. It's a British show. It's on, I'm not sure what channel is on over there. I don't think it's on BBC proper. I think it's on one of the other British channels that none of us are familiar with. But it's pretty popular over there. Like I said, on here, you can watch it on YouTube for free. There's 12 seasons, I believe, out now and a couple of special episodes.
And how'd a British show make it 12 seasons? Is that a thing that can happen?
It is a thing that can happen. Yes, indeed.
Wow.
At least in this case, I suppose. I don't know. But what Taskmaster is, it's kind of a game show, and I'm going to use game show like in air quotes there. But basically what it is it's each episode or each season, or series as they call it, has 5 comedians that are kind of on a panel, and what they do beforehand, before like the show tapes, like the framing sequence that takes place in a studio, they go out and they meet up the people that are running the show, and they perform certain tasks. The task might be, in the next room there is a watermelon, eat as much of it you can in 1 minute, your time starts when you open the door. Or it might be, you know, throw this potato into the golf hole over there that you cannot step on the green. Stuff like that. And it's all comedians pretty much. So they're kind of creative people, and a lot of the tasks kind of require you to be creative. So it's interesting and often hilarious watching them perform it. You know, see how they each interpret it. Some of them play it very much by the book of, you know, doing it exactly as the task is written. Some of them kind of interpret it differently and will kind of bend the rules a little bit and do things kind of, you know, that you might not initially think of, kind of depending on how they see it. It's a funny as heck show. The first 2 seasons are only 5 episodes each, 5 or 6 episodes. After that, it goes up to 10, I believe. We just finished up the second season the other day. It's funny as hell. You probably aren't going to know any of the comedians on there, but that's fine. It's still funny. It's good to get to know some new people. You know, maybe you'll go watch them on some other shows. But Taskmaster, it's on YouTube. It is well worth your time. It's some funny stuff. And, yeah, it's good.
Good. Good, good, good. My recommendation, for those that know me, one thing I like to do, and I have a great appreciation and love of, is I love awkward humor. I like sometimes like just being uncomfortable intentionally, and not like in a creepy way, but I like saying something, and part of it's like, how's the person going to react if I say this? And then people that know me like, oh, it's just Mike being Mike. Yeah, haha, we got it, Mike. But if you don't really know me that well, some people are like, wait, is he serious? Wait, what's going on? And I like that kind of humor where it just, it kind of has this just serious take, but it's also just as equally absurd. So one show that debuted on Netflix over this past month, Kyle Mooney is a cast member of Saturday Night Live, and he helped write and develop a show for Netflix. It's about 6 episodes, and it's called Smash, Saturday Morning All-Star Hits. And the premise is, it kind of like taps into a weird fake nostalgia. Like when we were growing up as kids in the late 80s, early 90s, watching Saturday morning cartoons was ultimately like, you know, an awesome thing to do. This is almost like they're playing off videotapes of like old, like, and some people used to do this. They would just take a VHS tape and they would tape Saturday morning cartoons and watch them over and over again. That's what this kind of is where it's kind of almost like two hosts of like a Saturday morning, you know, cartoons, like over the, you know, period of the, you know, morning, and they're introducing all these shows, and the shows are some of the most awkward, bizarre shows possible, where, again, it's supposed to be done in, like, a, you know, pure, like, you know, late 80s, early 90s vibe, but then, like, they just do what they can to make it just as cringeworthy and awkward as possible, and there's a weird ongoing story arc in each episode, how, like, one of the hosts of the show becomes popular and how it weirdly influences every other aspect of the cartoons. Then it almost turns into like a weird unsolved mysteries. It turns almost into like a VH1 behind the series. It is completely odd and weird, but that's what just makes it funny. Like they have a character like John, you remember Denver the Last Dinosaur?
Yes.
Now imagine like an awkward version of that who is, you know, heavy into drinking, is going to college and has a firefighter girlfriend that, you know, he is very dysfunctional relationship.
Interesting.
All just cringeworthy. I laughed at it pretty hard. So Saturday Morning All-Star Hits on Netflix.
I might have to look into that.
Mm-hmm. I think you do. All right, normally this would be when we would have our arbitrary list segment where we come up with a list of things and we talk about, hey, what's the best topping for potatoes? Well, we're going to save the arbitrary list for the back end of the episode. And part of the reason why is because our arbitrary list is going to be ranking all of the Spider-Man movies in order what we think is best worst. And obviously with us talking about Spider-Man No Way Home, it gives us the ability then to see where that stacks up against the other Spider-Man movie. Now, kind of tap into this. So, John, I don't know if, but prior to this movie, what is your kids' experience with the Spider-Man movies?
They've seen the previous two Tom Holland movies, but other than that, like nothing. Like we've told them before, like you get, they would probably like the Tobey Maguire movies, at least the first two. You know, we might watch those with them, you know, coming up here, especially since now that they've seen, I assume we're going to do spoilers for this, correct?
Yeah.
Yes. Spoilers, everybody. If you have not seen No Way Home, you might want to hang on for the rest of this podcast.
Or even any of the other Spider-Man movies too.
Yeah. Spoilers for basically any Spider-Man movie released within the last 21 or so years. But yeah, so now that, you know, since they both show up in this one, you know, you know, they might have a little bit more interest. But yeah, basically they've just seen the Tom Holland ones and they've liked them both, but nothing else.
All right. The past week I went online and I bought like basically a, you know, 4K bundle, digital bundle, which is all the Spider-Man movies, including the license to the, you know, new one when it finally gets released on digital. And my kids, I've had them kind of just watch their way through all the Spider-Man movies just to get a vibe and feel. And I told them, like, based on what I know, you're going to probably want to know this, or the movie's going to be kind of confusing in some ways, because you're going to see a lot of characters that seem familiar to everybody else, but not to you, because you may have not seen the movie. So we watched all the movies, and then we saw, No Way Home last night. And I'll say this. I mean, opening comments about the movie itself, I think it is definitely a very good movie. It's definitely a nice keystone / capstone movie to the Tom Holland series. I will say that I do have one interesting particular opinion about the movie, but before I say it, what's your opinions of this movie?
I really enjoyed it. I think it did a lot of interesting stuff, a lot of bold stuff. It's towards the top of my list. I'm not sure, I don't want to spoil my list, but it's up there. And that could very well be just due to, recency bias, just because it's the one I've seen the most recent, and, I enjoyed it. So I think it's something I might have to, revisit this list in, 3-4 months once it's kind of in the rearview mirror to look at it. But I enjoyed it. It was good. It was fun. It kind of delivered what I was expecting, which, considering what I was expecting from it, is quite a bit. So, yeah, it was good stuff.
I would say this. Having rewatched all the Spider-Man movies this previous week leading up to this, it definitely, I think, helped the overall movie experience, because it helped refresh a lot of little things you didn't know. You see the good, you see the bad. I would say this. This is a great Spider-Man movie, but it's only a good Spider-Man movie if you haven't watched any of the other ones. I think it's an odd movie in the sense that it really needs, it's almost like a clever culmination of every previous incarnation of Spider-Man to try to make this movie what it is. And I think it redeems a lot of the previous movies' flaws in a lot of different ways. But if you haven't seen those previous movies, the emotional impact isn't going to be there. So, again, I think it's a good movie if you haven't seen any of the other Spider-Man movies. But if you've seen the other movies, it's a great movie because of how much more impactful and how much it can resonate with the viewer itself.
Yes, that's probably a good way to put it. Like, I was talking with my sister yesterday because she just saw it, and I was telling her, I'm like, I think it's interesting to see that Marvel, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe in a whole, has kind of gotten to where like comic books are, like where there's continuity to watching these movies. And I think this movie almost more so, with the possible exception of like Endgame, you need to have seen, if this is your first Marvel Cinematic Universe movie, you're going to be lost. You're not going to have any idea what's going on. Because there's a lot of backstory to this thing with the multiverse, with Doctor Strange, with, the previous movies, what's going on, and it's, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but I think it's just interesting that the movies have kind of gotten to where you need to have that continuity of knowing what's happened before, just like the comics. Like, if you pick up Spider-Man number 37, you might not, there's a good chance you're not going to have the full story there. It's going to take a little bit of catching up to do. And also in that too, that with this introducing, or not introducing, because it was introduced in like Loki, but kind of expanding on the multiverse thing, that's a thing that's, never really been a part of, wide, release, movies with this type of audience. It's something that us as comic book fans, we're used to, of course there's a multiverse, there's alternate realities and alternate futures and all that, but it's not something that's really ever been introduced on this scale. I think even Loki, I don't think most people that saw this movie probably didn't watch the Loki series. I think that's more, a lot of people watched it, I think, but not quite as wide an audience as this got. So I think it's interesting that the movies are kind of in a place where comics have been for a while, and which could be good and could be bad. I think it'll be interesting to see where they take it from here, with as much continuity as how they handle that going forward, and what they end up doing with this multiverse thing, which seems to be going to be the driving force for phase 4.
I think maybe the better way to put it is this, is that it's curious if these movies are going to be for the casual person that watches movies. And it's just like comics. Like, it's hard for now a casual the person to casually get into comics, because since there is so much lore and history that's involved in all of these comics, you're right. You just can't pick up now an issue and like, oh, I now know what's going on with that. And it becomes a very difficult thing, you know, at this point. You know, movies have almost been the same way. Like, if you want to be realistic about this in terms of just getting an idea of the scope of these movies, you could have a person that was born in 2008 when the first Iron Man first came out. Now they're hitting like 13 years old, almost 14 years old at this level. And, you know, if they're watching these movies now as a teenager, you know, imagine now having to go back and watch like all prior movies to kind of be able to do this. But now here's where it gets odd, I think, in some ways, John. Think about the fact that this movie has made $1 billion worldwide already within the first week, which is a bananas amount of box office sales. So if that's the one thing that almost does it prove my theory wrong about being harder for casual fans, because if you're selling almost $1 billion in tickets, that's a lot of people seeing it. So either that means that a lot of these people have already previously watched all the Marvel movies. And to be honest, it could be the case, because I think the hard thing now is this, is that with Disney Plus, that same 13, 14-year-old I was talking about, imagine they have a subscription to Disney Plus, and now they can just sit there and binge through all the Marvel movies or watch through them at a much more leisurely pace versus what it was like maybe several years ago. So I really think it's kind of interesting to see the level of success the movie is and just seeing how people have kind of, I think, taken to the overall concept of these movies in general.
No, and I think that's the thing, is I think they've built their audience since Iron Man, you know, 2008, and they've been building that audience, and the vast majority of people that I think that watch this movie probably have seen every single Marvel movie and are kind of along for it, and that's why it did so good, is people knew that this was going to be a culmination of that, a lot of that, and it's, you know, the masses are going to see it. You know, it's not just, like I said, it's not just the geek. You can't get $1 billion box office like that with just the hardcore nerds going to these things. You know, it's the same thing with like Star Wars. You're not going to get, you know, these movies don't get these huge box office numbers by just the hardcore nerds going, because there's not that many of them out there. You have to have the wider appeal. And I think that's what the Marvel Cinematic Universe has done, is that it's taken people for this 13-year, you know, 20-some movie long ride, and everybody's along for it. And they knew that this was going to be a big benchmark in that. So everybody kind of wants to go see it. You know, nobody wants to get spoiled. So they're trying to go see it as soon as they can. And I think that's a huge thing, especially now with, you know, the pandemic is still a big thing. You know, I mean, you know, this new variant is ramping up, but people are still willing to go out and see it in theaters.
Well, here's another also aspect to this. When I look at how successful this movie has been, I went and saw the movie, and it was bad inclement weather last night, John. I mean, the roads are really slick, you know, and it took a little while longer for me to get to the theater, but I left earlier. So I got there, and there's all the previews, and I'm sitting there, and there's the 6 to 7 previews they show you before the movie. And in my back of my head, it was along the lines of, why do we still need this? Because all of these previews are previews that I've already seen before, probably, because in today's modern day and age of the internet, movie preview comes out, guess what? It's on YouTube. It's everywhere. You can see it. Whereas before, remember, it used to be like a bigger event. If you wanted to, you know, see the preview of this movie, you got to go see this movie, and yeah, it'll be playing during this. That's not the case anymore. And when I'm watching the previews, you know, knowing going into watching the movie last night and knowing that it had $1 billion in box office, I'm looking at the previews, and I'm like, I don't know if any of these movies that there's previews for will ever be able to hit this plateau. And there was a Buzz Lightyear movie, and I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if it could do it. There's a lot of huge nostalgia there, but, you know, could it, you know, match like what $1 billion, just like, you know, Spider-Man did. There was a preview for the Batman. And again, it's like, I don't know if it could do it. And on a side note, man, I had to explain this to my wife, Jen. It's like, do you know who's playing the Penguin? She's, no, who is that? And I'm like, that's Colin Farrell. She's like, what? I'm like, yeah, I know. He's going full blown on this, but good for him. But then, like, I saw a preview for The movie based on the video game series Uncharted, which also has Tom Holland, completely miscast in my opinion, but different thing there. But I'm just watching all of these previews, and through it all, it's like the movies are in just a weird place. Like, I feel like you have some movies like Spider-Man, No Way Home, that can just hit a complete home run. And I think it's because it does a perfect job of connecting on an emotional level. And I think, consider maybe this is the reason why I did $1 billion. There was no secrets that all of the previous Spider-Man villains and Spider-Mans were going to be in the movie. So let's go beyond that third hypothetical 13, 14-year-old talking about. We're talking about almost two, maybe barely three generations of people at this point who have been watching these movies. And that's where you get your $1 billion right there. You get all these people coming in that remember when they first saw Spider-Man in the theaters, like, wow, this is the most amazing thing in the world. And it's just an interesting journey, I guess, in how overall superhero movies have come. So, all of that being said, should we start talking about the premise of the movie?
Yeah, I mean, if you're this far in, you've probably seen it. But basically, it starts with, you know, Spider-Man, you know, Peter Parker's life is basically hell because Mysterio outed him and claims that he's a murderer, which I thought that part was kind of odd because wouldn't you think it wouldn't take much, I don't feel, to clear his name? You know, like somebody would come out, you know, who's a well-known superhero and would be like, look, this Mysterio guy was a fraud. And basically back him up. I thought it was kind of odd that basically nobody came to be like, you know, hey, I'm going to stand up for Spider-Man, Peter Parker, you know. But all that aside, so his life gets thrown into hell. He goes to Doctor Strange for help. And Doctor Strange is like, okay, I'll help you do this little spell thing that'll make everybody forget that you're Spider-Man. And then he basically cuts him off like, what is it, like five different times, I think. He's like, well, how about if this, you know, just like you've seen in the trailer, like, how about, you know, but this person should know, and this person should know, and it basically screws everything up, which makes, what is the initial issue that he has to contain the spell? I forget, like, it, I can't remember, and you've seen it more recently than me. Like, the spell does something, so Doctor Strange has to contain it, but I don't remember what it was that the spell, like, what went wrong with it.
I think part of it is because, Peter, at one point, you know, the last thing he says is that only the people who know that Peter Parker is Spider-Man should still remember that before all of this happened. And that's what triggered because and brought everybody in from the multiverse, because in previous Spider-Man movies, it was a horrible job done by Spider-Man, you know, keeping a secret identity secret. Everybody apparently figured it out at one point or another, you know, kind of like how every Batman, somebody figured out who Batman was, and then they didn't show up in the next movie, so we just assume Batman murdered him, right?
Probably.
Yeah, I mean, that makes perfect logic.
Vicky Vale's, you know, in some shallow grave somewhere.
The tack back on at one point you brought up, which, why didn't anybody vouch for him? Who's really left, though? When you really put it in perspective, Thor eventually probably went off into space and did his own thing. Guardians of the Galaxy are gone. Let's assume that this is running concurrently when all the other Marvel series are going on. So, you know, Wanda's off in exile. You maybe have the Winter Soldier and, you know, Captain Falcon, you know, basically doing their own thing. There really isn't a functional version of the Avengers right now when you put it into perspective.
Yeah, and maybe that's the thing, is if you go back and you do, like, you know, if we were to do, like, a checklist of where everybody is at this point, they were all just busy, and the only people who maybe could have done it, like, you know, just the public would have been like, yeah, what do I care what Ant-Man thinks about Spider-Man, you know, like, who are you again, what do I care, you know, so that could be the case.
And, you know, they do address the fact that, hey, you know what, ask Nick Fury, it's like, Fury's been off planet for, like, a year, and then, of course, you know, that ties up that fact that, yeah, that wasn't Nick Fury, if you saw, like, the end credits of Far From Home. But, yeah, I mean, you have all of those events. It brings in all of these other people from the multiverse who are other Spider-Man villains. So then it becomes a mad dash to capture them until Peter discovers that, guess what? They're all, you know, going to die if he sends it back. So then he goes on the, no, I'm not going to do that, have that weight on my conscience, and goes through, like, you know, the rehab tour of trying to rehab all the villains before sending it back. Almost works, but you know what? Osborn's going to Osborn and creates a bunch of more chaos. You have then the introduction of the other Spider-Men. And then really, you have the death of... And here comes a big super spoiler. Stop right now. Yeah? You still here? Cool. Then you have the death of Aunt May, and then how all the other two Spider-Men essentially kind of try to impart their wisdom on the Peter about, you know, the coping of the whole thing. And then, you know, just it's the loss of Peter's innocence. Now, this only does exaggerate or exasperate another question here. So did Uncle Ben die, or was he already dead before Peter got his powers?
We don't really know. I mean, that's the thing with this trilogy kind of starting with him already being Spider-Man. Like, you know, he does say at this point in the movie, you know, Tom Holland, I think, which I don't know that he said in the other ones, like something about when that spider bit me. But I don't know that he really ever addresses Uncle Ben. Does he? I don't think he addresses him in this movie either, does he?
No. And
I know he doesn't in the previous two.
They are doing a Spider-Man movie where... or not Spider-Man movie, a Disney Plus show, which is kind of almost the origin of, you know, Tom Holland Spider-Man that's going to be coming out in the next year or two. So we'll get maybe more to the bottom of that. But essentially, Aunt May becomes probably Peter's Spider-Man or Peter's Uncle Ben, you know, when you put it in perspective.
Yeah, I did think it was interesting when they all kind of go through, like, you know, I lost my Uncle Ben. I lost, you know, who did Andrew Garfield lose? Was it Gwen Stacy?
Yeah. Well, and he also lost Uncle Ben, too, but apparently he likes Gwen Stacy more than Uncle Ben, so.
Apparently, so that's the one that gets all the credit. And it was nice, I think, getting to, you know, the scenes with all three of them together. It was cool when, you know, they opened up that portal, and I knew, I'm sure everybody did. As soon as Ned opened up that portal and, you know, there's some Spider-Man walking down, and I'm like, oh, that's not going to be, you know, Tom, that's going to be one of the other ones. I did think, and I don't know... This is another thing is that, like, Toby looked old was the thing I thought was interesting. Like, he didn't, you know, like, they didn't do anything to de-age him. So I'm wondering, is his Peter Parker, like, older? Did his stuff take place, like, you know, like, in real time from, you know, from us? You know, did his movies take place, you know, the stuff that happened in his movies take place 20 years ago? So he's, you know, in his 30s, maybe, you know?
Well, Otto Octavius did make the comment, you know, to Peter, you know, Toby Peter, that, hey, you've grown up. So there is the verbal acknowledgement that, yes, Toby Maguire is older and there has been a passage of time. And the dialogue about, you know, Mary Jane and everything and how things have changed, it kind of almost, again, maybe let's put it in perspective here. Is Tobey Maguire Spider-Man the same one we see inside the Spider-Verse as the one that mentors Miles?
No, I don't think so. You mean the Peter B. Parker or whatever it is?
Yeah.
I don't think so. And I never really thought that it was.
Because remember, when they show that Spider-Man, or no, because that would be the Chris Pine one, because the Chris Pine one was one where they showed him like dancing, you know, much like Spider-Man 3. Yeah. So. But, I mean, that's just it, is that, you know, maybe he didn't have that as happy of an ending, and he's still, you know, maybe he is this middle-aged sad sack, and that's what's going on there. But, you know, they definitely don't indicate, you know, how much time has passed for each one. You know, they do mention that Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man definitely was going through more rage issues and showed much more that he was willing to admit there was a darker outcome because of the loss of Gwen Stacy after Spider-Man 2, you know. And I think that's good. I think it's good to show the flaws that there's no way that you can be Spider-Man and not come out of it with some scars. And clearly these two did, but they still were being Spider-Man regardless of that because they still wanted to do right by Uncle Ben, you know, who died for them. So,
yeah, and I think that's a big part of like who Spider-Man is he perseveres. You know, he keeps going regardless. You know, he's very much, and I think this movie did a good job of showing that, you know, that he's a hero, and he, being a hero isn't always just, you know, getting the glory and getting the credit. It's, you know, having to make tough decisions that are going to impact you, you know, possibly the ones you love. And it's, you know, the not easy part, you know, like at the end where he, you know, makes the decision that, you know, everybody's going to forget who I am, and that's going to really suck for me and, you know, and kind of for everybody else that knows him, even though they technically don't know it. But that's the right decision that he has to make in order to save the world at that time. You know, like he has to make this sacrifice. And that's, I think, it really shows that aspect of Spider-Man really well that, you know, he's willing to make that sacrifice you know, and basically start over from scratch without any friends, without any backup.
Even when he could have went in and told him, even when he went in and could have told him, like, yeah, you know, hi, I'm, you know, Peter Parker. I used to be Spider-Man. You know who I am, but now you don't. You know, it's again, it's that with great power thing that, you know, I could, but would I be endangering them? They seem happy, you know, and I think part of it is it's understanding that it's kind of the hero's journey, is that sometimes these are the sacrifices you have to make. Just kind of like how, you know, Tony Stark realized, well, I got to sacrifice myself to save the whole world. You know, sometimes you have those decisions and it's not going to be the happy ending. And I think that's really, I think, you know, one thing that does make, I think, the movie work at the end is the fact that, you know, it isn't the happy ending where he comes in, like, and she's like, oh, you wait, I am, and you do know me? No, it's, you know, Peter's going to go through his trials at this point, and, you know, we'll see where it goes, especially since it's been announced that Holland's going to do possibly 3 more of these movies.
Yeah, and I think they do definitely hit that big reset button at the end, which I didn't mind. My wife was kind of, Mariah was kind of bummed about. She's like, well, basically these 3 movies didn't matter then. I'm like, well, yes and no. I mean, they definitely matter, but, you know, I can kind of see where she's coming from, where some people might not like that. I kind of appreciate it because I think it'll be interesting to see where Spider-Man goes from here, because I think at the end of the day, Spider-Man should be more of a ground level everyday hero. You know, I mean, the Spider-Man we've had for pretty much this whole time, with the exception of maybe the movies he's been, you know, the Spider-Man movies himself, you know, he's been going off into space, and he's been, you know, he's got these, you know, even in his movies, he has these high tech, you know, Spider-Man armor suits, you know, that are, you know, helping him do his job a lot more, you know, where he has to rely on that more than he does himself. Whereas now he doesn't have Stark technology to help him out. He's basically just got a homemade Spider-Man suit. He's got to figure out how to make, you know, how to make and how to afford, you know, web fluid. So we're going to see, you know, we'll maybe see some of that stuff in the next few movies. You know, it'll be more the Spider-Man that we're used to in the comic books and stuff, you know, which I think will be interesting to see, and, you know, see where the characters go from there. You know, are we going to see MJ and Ned Leeds in these next few movies? Are we not? You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Weird callbacks to the whole web thing. So they have a funny moment where they're all comparing about their webs and how Toby Spider-Man, you know, has organic versus everything else. Having rewatched all the Spider-Man movies, I think that's another thing that's weird about the Andrew Garfield one, is that you have Toby, they gave him organic ones. Like, all right, it's a radical change, but whatever. And you have Tom Holland, who, you know, makes his own spider web fluid. But then you have Andrew Garfield, who doesn't invent his own spider web fluid. Instead, he buys it in bulk from Osborne Industries, which I don't know how he managed to pull off, and then uses Osborne technology for his web shooters. Kind of weird that nobody has ever, like, figured out that, oh, this is Osborne technology, and then just tracked it from there.
Yeah, you'd think that'd be an easy one to do, but, you know, hey, right. Apparently not.
So, yeah, I think the overall scope of the movie, there was definitely, I think, a lot of fine moments. I think the movie did a good job of trying to, like, reform certain individuals in the movie. Like, obviously, I feel that it does a good job redeeming Dr. Octopus, Otto Octavius, and, you know, he has a good moment there. I think, ultimately, it shows, like, you know, I think the value and the strengths of both Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire. And then, again, having watched the movies just recently, there was different things. I feel like the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man in this movie is far, far superior than the droopy dog, sad sack Charlie Brown version we got in the original 3 with Tobey. Tobey, ironically enough, was probably the worst part about the previous Spider-Man movies he was in, which sounds mean, but it's true. I think he had the nerd side of Parker down, but he couldn't banter or quip. He never seemed to have any confidence and always just seemed to be, I'm sad, I'm Tobey Maguire, I wish I had a fan. Then you have, like, the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man, which is a master of quipping, but he doesn't pull off the nerd aspect of, you know, Spider-Man, which, you know, Tom Holland, I think, integrated both of those perfectly fine. So, yeah, I feel they do both a good job of informing the previous movies.
Yes, it's good stuff. And I haven't seen, you know, any of the preview. Well, heck, I haven't ever seen Amazing Spider-Man 2, but I haven't watched any of the earlier 2 franchises or whatever versions in quite a while. So, yeah, it'd be interesting. Yeah, I think you're right about Toby, though. He's I think he was good, but not great. I think back then we probably liked him more than we did because, you know, it was all we had, and, you know, there wasn't really a whole lot going on for comic book movies back then. Yeah, I lost my train of thought there.
Yes, you did. Got derailed when he put a penny on your track. Whoop, whoop.
Damn it. Son of a...
I think the movie also did a tremendous job of having a whole bunch of, I would say, almost not spoilers, but weird Easter eggs and meta commentary as well. Like, first, let's talk about one of the things that we kind of all knew was going to be there, but come on, Matt Murdock being in the movie. How great was that?
Yeah, that was it was a nice little, like, it didn't have to be there, you know, but it was cool to see. And it's one of those things, too, I feel like, where if you don't know who he is, like, if you haven't seen, you know, if you don't know who Matt Murdock is, period, if you haven't seen the Daredevil Netflix series, you know, you just might be like, that was weird. And it's kind of inconsequential. Like, it doesn't, you know, it's not relevant to the plot, really. And I think I read somewhere that they filmed that part later because they couldn't officially sign Charlie Cox till a certain point after, like, his Netflix contract was over, which was after they had already started shooting or something like that, which is why you could easily take that scene out and it wouldn't matter. But it is a great little nice scene to see him in there. You know, I was kind of, when the trailers were coming out and everybody's like, oh, it's Daredevil. I was like, yeah, whatever. I was kind of like, maybe, but probably not, because people always like to overanalyze trailers. It kind of drives me nuts.
Hey, John, when was Mephisto in the movie? Did we see Mephisto in the movie?
Where was Mephisto? I'm sure there's something. If you look up, like, you know, if you Google, like, No Way Home Mephisto, I'm sure there's some kind of, you know, because everybody likes to think Mephisto now for some reason.
Sticking Mephisto up your ass.
Which, I mean, at least in this movie, it would kind of make sense, because this is technically the movie version of, you know, One More Day or whatever the hell that horrible storyline is, which Mephisto is actually in. So, you know, at least it would kind of make sense here.
Now, I also thought, equally great, you were able to bring back so much of the core actors from all the previous movies. Interesting omissions. They don't have Venom, which is Topher Grace. But knowing Topher Grace, I don't think Topher Grace would ever have agreed to be back in the movies because of just...
No, I don't. Yeah, I don't think he's acting at all anymore. Plus, I think that would have just been...
He's doing more like producing and, you know, directing at this point.
Yeah. And I think with them actually trying to launch a whole Venom franchise, I think that maybe just would have been a little off, maybe, right. I think. So I can kind of see it. And plus, Venom was just not good. I mean, that whole Spider-Man 3 was not good, but Venom in particular was not good there.
They didn't bring back any of Harry Osborn. And that's also equally good, because I'm sure nobody wants to touch James Franco with a 20-foot pole because of all his recent conduct issues that have come to light over the past several years. So,
yeah,
you don't have him. You don't have Paul Giamatti as the Rhino, which he was only in it for a couple little blurbs here and there, so it's not like his inclusion was impactful. You don't have the horrible Harry Osborn from Amazing Spider-Man 2, which you've never seen, John.
No, I'm okay with that.
Nor do you have, of course, what could have been an amazing Norman Osborn if they didn't kill him off right away in Amazing Spider-Man 2 with Chris Cooper. See, now you're going to have to see it, John.
No, I don't. I don't need to see what's-his-name fall into a vat of electric eels.
You do. You do.
No. But anyway.
So, I mean, you had a nice, pretty well complete rounded cast in there, which was definitely, I think, nice. You know, you brought back everybody else. You get to the end. Everybody goes home. You have where Doctor Strange fixes things, but also probably still breaks things in so many different ways. You learn that Doctor Strange is no longer the Sorcerer Supreme because he blinked out of existence.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of an interesting little touch, which makes sense. You know, I mean, he was gone for 5 years. There's got to be a Sorcerer Supreme of some sort. So
right.
So Wong took that over, which would also kind of explain why, you know, like, get that post-credit scene for Shang-Chi and, you know, why Wong was there kind of explaining everything and, you know, seemed a little bit more important than he normally did because, well, he's the Sorcerer Supreme now. Mm-hmm. We just didn't know it at the time.
Nope. Helps fill in that gap. There was a post-credit scene with Tom Hardy's Venom, which really just kind of inconsequential, except for, oops, I left some Venom behind.
Well, it was almost like a sequel, which I haven't seen yet. I haven't seen the Venom 2 Let There Be Carnage or whatever the hell it's called, but I guess the post-credit scene there was him blipping over to our world, and then so it's almost like a post-credits sequel to another post-credits scene. So, which yeah. you know, whatever. It was neat, but you know, it was good for a post-credits scene. I think like kind of a neat. Oh, that was kind of neat, but you know, and now there's some symbiote goo here, so we'll see where that goes.
And then lastly, you have, of course, the kind of trailer for Doctor Strange and the multiverse and how Wanda's going to come back. So you got all that going for you, too.
Indeed. There's a whole lot of stuff going on here.
Mm-hmm. I would say that, you know, through the movie, I think the pacing of the movie was, for the most part, fairly decent. I think the hard thing is like, this is a 2.5 hour movie. When you see that kind of thing right there, you know, like, I'll use as a base comparison. I watched Spider-Man 3 a few days ago. It was pretty painful. And it felt painful, and I'm watching the movie, and after a while, I'm just sitting there, I'm like, how long is this? And the movie was almost 2 hours, 2 hours, 40 minutes long. Which back in 2007, that's almost 4 hours when you consider that movies really weren't running as long back then. Matter of fact, it was maybe around that 2008 area that you started seeing movies get longer, like the 3 hour, you know, Benjamin Button movie or something along those lines. But I think they just had so much crammed in there, and Spider-Man 3. So when you see how this movie did run 2.5 hours and it had so many different characters in there, I don't think any character is filler. I think every character really got the appropriate amount of spotlight that those characters needed to do and accomplish what they needed in the movie. You know, it was an amazing balancing act where we're going to have all these moving pieces, and they found a way to make it work pretty well.
Yeah, everybody kind of got their moment to shine. One thing also I think that's interesting that, you know, may or may not pay off in the future is that Ned is basically a sorcerer of some sort. I mean, when you think about it, he got that sling ring on and is basically casting portals, you know, not necessarily knowing what he's doing or doing it purposely, but when you look back at the Doctor Strange movie and how hard it was for him to make portals, and, you know, here's Ned without even anybody telling him how to do it or whatnot, and he's doing it basically his first shot. So I'll be curious to see if that has any payoff or was just kind of a, like a quick little, you know, one and done. They made mention like in the past he has some sorcerer or something like that, I think, but...
In the comic universe, Ned Leeds would go on to become the Hobgoblin, which would become a Spider-Man villain for multiple years until his untimely death and then other goofiness with comics.
Yeah, there was a whole mess there.
By the way, speaking of Spider-Man, I got bored, so I decided to try to like reread like late 80s Amazing Spider-Man. Like, right up before you got to when Todd McFarlane took over and, like, you know, when the art transitioned over to Eric Larson. That's pretty bad. It's a pretty bad Spider-Man.
I want to say the mid-80s stuff is a little bit better from what I remember. I'm trying to... Who was doing like, the art and what were the stories and stuff right before McFarlane or a couple of them?
Well, there was a period of time where they had like three Spider-Man comics almost, because they had Amazing Spider-Man, Spectacular Spider-Man, and Web of Spider-Man. And a lot of that spun off from after Secret Wars when Peter got his black suit, and kind of like that's when they started like doubling down more on Spider-Man around that time. But, you know, reading that, it's like I could sit there and say why somebody would like that in the 80s and like early 90s. Like, oh man, look at, they're drawing Mary Jane really hot and all, look at all these awesome things. And oh man, Wolverine. And now like reading back to it, it's like, did not age well. Did not age well at all.
Yeah, that's the thing with comics. Is every now and then you get in their ruts where you look back, like a lot of the 90s stuff, and you're just like, ugh, what were we thinking?
Mm-hmm. Well... before we say our final thoughts on Spider-Man, let's maybe cut into our arbitrary list right now. This is how I want us to do it, John. Let's do it backwards. We count ourselves down to number one. So we start with what we think is the worst Spider-Man movie, and then we go from there.
Yes.
All right.
Let's do it.
I think yours is going to be a very easy one. Mine was very difficult to try to figure out what was the worst.
Mine's easy. I went with Amazing Spider-Man 2 just because, as previously mentioned, I haven't seen it yet. Had I seen it, I think it would probably also be a difficult call for me between that and what my next one is, which is, I'm sure our bottom two are probably the same. You may have switched the order of yours, I'm guessing.
So my worst, we'll talk about both these movies because they almost go hand in hand. My worst is Spider-Man 3. That being said, I could almost see an argument for it being a tie between Spider-Man 3 and Amazing Spider-Man 2. I think when you balance out those two movies, number 3 is the worst for me. Granted, number 2 should only be a fraction behind because, keep in mind, this was a movie so bad that it killed the franchise. It killed it dead. I mean, same thing. Spider-Man 3 killed the franchise. They were going to do a Spider-Man 4 as well, but, you know, they shifted out of that, and ultimately that's what led to Andrew, you know, Garfield. But I'd say Spider-Man 3 because the movie, it doesn't know what it wants to be. You have too many villains in the movie between Venom and Harry Osborn being the new Goblin, and you have Sandman. It's almost as bad as what Batman movies were like back in like the 90s, where just overload on bad guys. The movie, it really wanted to be a musical. There's like 5 or 6 musical scenes in there where there's just songs like Peter's horrible like nightclub scene where he's dancing and stuff. And then there's like a weird scene where like Harry and Mary Jane are dancing the Chubby Checkers to Twist while making omelets. Just whole inexplicable things. That movie could have been cut down tremendously. And maybe you would have had a tighter movie out of it. But it was just bad. It was bad. And I think the movie did one thing. It made everybody unlikable. There was nobody really to cheer for. Peter was kind of being a pompous dick. Mary Jane was, you know, going through some things too, but also being kind of selfish. Harry was being just a jackass. Nobody in there is a likable person. So that's why 3's in the bottom. But Amazing Spider-Man 2 is not far behind.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much everything you said. Like, it's been a while since I've seen Spider-Man 3. But you're pretty much spot on there. Like, it's just an awkward movie, kind of painful to watch. It's not one like, you know, like if I do go back and watch, you know, Spider-Man 1 and 2 with the kids, like, maybe we'll skip 3, guys. You don't need to see 3. There's nothing there you're missing out on. Like even some bad movies at least will have a few bits where you're like, you know, oh, well, the movie's pretty bad, but it's got that one cool scene in it, or that one, you know, a couple of cool parts in it. But I can't really think of any in this one where it's like, even like the last, you know, the end climactic battle is just like not great, not what you want it to be. They're not good. And I think the interesting thing too, I think like you had mentioned with Spider-Man or Amazing Spider-Man 2 being a franchise killer, like a super franchise killer too, because they were going to like spin off like a Sinister Six movie. They were going to spin off they were supposed to be doing all sorts of different crazy, weird stuff. Like, I remember there were all these rumors that they were going to, not even rumors, they were supposedly already shooting some of it. But then it all just got tanked because this, you know, Amazing Spider-Man 2 just did so bad that they just abandoned everything. And then, which maybe not a bad thing because that's where we got where we are now.
Right. So that's our number 9 and our number 8 movie. We do have them flip-flop between the two, but for different reasons. So, John, if that's 9 and 8, what's your 7?
My 7 for me is Amazing Spider-Man, the first one of the Garfield movies, which, I mean, I wouldn't say it's bad, but it's just, it's fine, I think, is kind of for me. You know, I think I saw it once. I saw it in the theaters. And again, yeah, like, it was fine. Like, I wouldn't actively say it was bad, but it just didn't really do a whole lot for me. It was just, you know, it was there. Like, yeah, that was a movie, you know, kind of like, well, there's one of the DC movies I saw, which, you know, I was just like, yeah, that sure was a movie. Like, wasn't really great. Wasn't horribly bad. It was just, it was there. And that was kind of this one, like, for, you know, which being for the introductory movie for a new Spider-Man, a new, you know, Peter Parker, a new franchise, you know, you really want to kind of do something a little bit more, I think, bold, more daring, you know. Instead you go with Lizard, who I think, you know, like, really, you're going to go with Lizard for your introductory villain? Like, you know, I mean, I can see why you don't want to do Green Goblin, because that's what they did with the previous franchise, and you don't want to, you know, carbon copy that. But I mean, you could go somewhere else other than Lizard, but, you know, hey, that's what they did.
All right. I do have a different number 7. And this one, This one I probably, some people would give me heat for, but hear it out. I'm going to say Homecoming.
Ooh.
And the reason why is that I think Homecoming gets high marks because it's the first official, you know, full-blown Tom Holland Spider-Man movie. But when you look at, you know, how his debut was probably almost much more interesting in Civil War, I think it does a lot of the place setting that a movie like that is supposed to do. But going back to what you were kind of saying about how Lizard being the introductory villain for, you know, being the introductory villain for a Spider-Man franchise is kind of odd. Vulture is not much better either. Vulture, you know, granted that Michael Keaton, I think, was good in the movie, I just don't feel that the movie resonated with me as much. I think it was just a lot of where it was a good movie. Like, maybe help me explain it better. The previous two movies, those are just garbage. Those are bad, bad, bad movies. I'm not saying that Homecoming is a bad movie. It's much, much better than the previous two movies I listed. I feel it just didn't have a lot of the emotional resonance and impact that I think a lot of the other movies above it would. So I have Homecoming as my number 7.
An interesting pick.
Mm-hmm.
My next one I went with, where am I here? Oh, I went with regular, the original Spider-Man, with the original, the one that started it all, back in 2001, was it?
One or two. I want to say two.
Somewhere around there. Tobey Maguire's debut. And it was good. Like, this is one, it probably doesn't hold up as well now since we've gotten, you know, so many different comic book movies. But back then, you know, you've got to remember, this was pretty much all we had. I think X-Men predated this by a year, I want to say. I think X-Men was 2000, wasn't it?
Yes.
You know, but I mean, that was pretty much it. This was still back when, you know, any comic book movie was pretty much a good one. And this one, I think, legitimately is. It still is pretty good. It holds up. It's not, you know, it's not the best. You know, I think Spider-Man 2 is better, obviously, because it's further up my list. You know, we haven't mentioned it yet, obviously, but it's, I think it was a good start. I mean, Tobey Maguire, we kind of already talked about him a little bit, being what he is. I think he did a good job with, you know, at the time with what he was given. Green Goblin was kind of an interesting, you know, was a good way to go with this one. I think it was kind of interesting the way they did him, where they gave him kind of the big weird, you know, I don't know, the Power Rangers mask, I think is what everybody calls it. Which apparently I did see a couple of videos recently. I think I'd seen them before where they actually did the more realistic goblin mask where it was more, you know, it was actually looked like a goblin thing, but it was actually, they thought it was too scary for kids and they didn't, you know, like they did such a good job with the animatronics on it that it actually looked kind of terrifying. And it kind of does. It looks really good, but I can kind of see at the same time where, like, yeah, we don't want to put that in there. It's a movie that we're kind of aiming at kids still because that's the day and the age it was. But
well, to tie into that too, I think they really did a better job with Green Goblin's look in No Way Home. I think with kind of the weird hooded sweatshirt, kind of like more looser clothing thing, that was actually a pretty good look for him.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing we kind of failed to mention earlier is that Willem Dafoe freaking knocked it out of the park in this one, I think. Just the creepy-ass looks he got on his face. I mean, that part where, you know, which I don't know that we've seen a whole lot of, you know, Spider-Man spider sense, but where he enters the room and it just suddenly starts going off and he's trying to figure out what the heck's happening. And suddenly you realize, oh, it's because, you know, Osborn's turning, you know, Green Goblin's taking over now. And that kind of sets everything off. Yeah, I mean, Dafoe did just awesome in No Way Home, but you know, and he did a good job too, I think, in this original Spider-Man too, and I think it was nice to see him reprise it and, you know, do more with that character. And I think, you know, Spider-Man is, yes, it's my next one.
All right, this is where Amazing Spider-Man 1 comes in for me here. So I put it ahead of Homecoming just because there it's also an introductory movie. I didn't mind Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man. I think that Andrew Garfield was a good Spider-Man in a bad movie. And I think that's, I think, the tragic part of it right there, is that watching that movie, it's not bad. It's just, I think it could have been a lot more, but I think the fact they were trying to, it's almost the same problem I feel that Tom Holland has versus, you know, this in his first movie too, where there's so much previous ground already covered, they're not trying to compare against it. Where both those movies, like, we can't do Norman Osborn. Fine. So, you know, they did, you know, they went and did Lizard. And the only reason I think I have this higher than Tom Holland is because I feel there was a better emotional impact in the movie than what Holland brought to the table in Homecoming. Again, both movies are good. I didn't mind, I think, Amazing Spider-Man. I think it just had a lot of potential that was just kind of left on the floor.
Yeah, and I think that's too. That's one thing also I've seen is that people have said that Garfield being in this one kind of shows that, you know, that he is a good Spider-Man, that he was just kind of putting kind of crap movies. Well, you know, and that's why you're getting a lot of people saying, you know, let's make Amazing Spider-Man 3 now, you know, and, you know, actually people legitimately want to see it, because, you know, whereas before, if you had said that a year ago, people would be like, what the hell are you thinking? Those movies are horrible. Whereas now people kind of realize, like, you know, Andrew Garfield was actually pretty good. He just, you know, had crap to work with.
That was the meta joke, too, that I loved when they're sitting there, like, on the, you know, Statue of Liberty talking, and Andrew Garfield realizes, man, this one Spider-Man's been to space, and this other Spider-Man's done all this stuff, and realizing he's the lame Spider-Man because he was kind of in the weaker movies that were just kind of the roll of the draw almost in some ways.
Yeah, but then they're like, no, man, you're amazing, you're amazing. And yeah, there were some nice bits with the three of them.
Right, right. So what's your next one?
I think... Oh, it is me next, isn't it? I went with Far From Home on the next one. For me, this one, I don't know, just didn't... It's good. I liked it. I didn't care for it as much as Homecoming. And I'm not sure why. I don't know. Maybe just because there's too much of the, you know, like the Stark stuff had a lot to do with it. You know, it's still good. I like it, but it's just out of the three Holland ones for me, it's kind of the one I like the least. I don't know. It's kind of hard to put a finger on why. I think Mysterio being the villain didn't work as much for me. Like, I mean, it was a cool reveal at the end, but that kind of meant that through most of the movie, even though you kind of knew he was going to be the villain, through most of the movie, you didn't actually have kind of a concrete villain for Spider-Man to go up against, even though, you know, he kind of did, but he kind of didn't. It was a nice thing, but it just didn't work as well for me as I think it will, obviously, for you and for other people. But, and again, that's not to say I didn't like it. It's just out of the three Tom Holland ones, that's the third for me, but still a good movie and one that I would watch again.
I have Far From Home as my number five also. And I think, to your point, again, not a bad movie. It's a muddy movie in so many different ways. I think, actually, I will say this. Jake Gyllenhaal was the best part of Far From Home, in my opinion. He nailed it as Mysterio. His delivery, his acting, I think he did a superb, amazing job as a villain. And you have to almost, because, you know, Mysterio being kind of just, oh, I'm a guy that does weird illusions and stuff. I think he pulled it off perfectly in there. I think, again, you're right. The Stark stuff really muddied up the movie, and really Far From Home almost was more of an epilogue to Endgame than it was really an actual Spider-Man movie itself, because of trying to like tie a lot of the things into the movie itself. You know, you have some good moments there with, you know, Peter and Mary Jane, but it's another one of those situations where I feel that the movie suffered just because I feel that almost all the other characters in the movie felt, again, a little bit more interesting than Tom Holland at the point. But in the whole, the movie I feel works better than the other four that I've listed.
Yes. My next one I went with is Homecoming. For me, I like this a bit more than you did, I think. I didn't mind Vulture being added, which is kind of a weird thing, because after I just said that, you know, really, you're going to do Lizard for your kickoff villain in this one, and this one, they, like you said, they do the Vulture. But, you know, I think Michael Keaton did a great job with it, and I think it was just a good introductory, you know, here's Spider-Man. I think it was nice. It's probably one of the first times we've had, you know, the first movie for a major hero that we didn't have to sit through in an origin movie for the whole time. You know, like, I'll be curious when this new Batman movie comes out, like, are we going to get stuck with 45 minutes of seeing his origin? You know, I mean, hopefully we've kind of gotten past the point where with Superman, Spider-Man, Batman, and maybe a couple others where we don't need to see their origin. We've seen it enough times. So it's kind of nice to just get a new Spider-Man. We got to kind of see him, you know, ground floor, see him doing his thing, and get kind of introduced into this bigger world where, you know, he meets Iron Man, he gets kind of introduced in this thing, you know, at the end of it, has the opportunity to become an Avenger. And I think it was just kind of nice to see that progression with him kind of getting used to this world, And you also, you know, you get the, you know, kind of a takeoff on the, you know, the ultimate Spider-Man moment where he, you know, in, I forget what it is, Amazing Spider-Man 34, I want to say, where the huge machine, falls on top and he can't lift it, but he finally just pulls from deep within and throws it off himself so we can go save Aunt May and save everybody else and stop Dr. Octopus. And, you know, you kind of get that here where the Vulture drops the building on him. So that's kind of cool to see. It was just a fun movie. You know, not super deep. It was nice. You know, you got introductions to all these characters. You got MJ, you got Ned, and I think they had nice introductions. You had the little, the minor twist partway through where you find out that his girlfriend's dad is the Vulture, which I think that was a great scene where, you know, they're in the car and you've got that whole tense moment where they kind of both know what's going on. I think both Tom Holland and Michael Keaton did a great job with that part. But Homecoming was good stuff.
And I think that add-in, like, we've kind of alluded with our previous movies we mentioned. I think the reason I think just Homecoming and Far From Home has suffered is because it's just too much Tony Stark, too much Avengers. It doesn't let it be a Spider-Man movie. Instead, it's Spider-Man in the first movie dealing with, you know, Tony Stark and, you know, now all of that. And then you have, you know, Far From Home, which, again, it's an epilogue almost to the Tony Stark story. So, you know, I think that's what I think why, you know, I often cringe more at those movies where it could have been more, but it just felt like it was just like a side note of other movies.
Yeah, and I think it'll be, maybe two-part, maybe why I'm so excited to see this next trilogy or what the college trilogy, as people are calling it. You know, where Spider-Man's on his own and he doesn't have all that backup. He doesn't have Iron Man kind of looming in the background, and we'll get an actual nice, solid Spider-Man movie without all that baggage.
Now, my number four, I have the original first Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire. And we alluded before, and I'll say it again, Willem Dafoe is an amazing actor. His portrayal of Norman Osborn in The Green Goblin, just magnificent. He really is, honestly, the best part of Spider-Man, because Tobey Maguire's whole sad sack, you know, behavior, again, it's off-putting to me in the movie. And everything that Norman Osborn does, everything that Willem Dafoe does, redeems the movie. There is, though, you know, despite my disliking of Tobey sometimes in this movie, it still hit all the right beats. It still had all the right emotional moments. It still did a great job of introducing. And again, back in, you know, 2001, 2002, this was probably the best case scenario of what we could have gotten for the movie. And you get little other quirks in there too, like, you know, Randy Macho Man Savage as Bonesaw. And, you know, I think ultimately it was a good, very good movie. And I think it made it so the X-Men movie didn't seem like a fluke. That's what really this movie did. It was a powerhouse in its day, and I think this movie only got stronger because of No Way Home, because of, you know, how it approached some of the things in there. So Spider-Man 1 was my number 4.
Nice. All right, my number 3, I'm assuming, is possibly going to be your number 3, but mine is Spider-Man 2. Which I think, you know, as good as Spider-Man, the original was, I think Spider-Man 2 just kicked everything up a notch. You know, Alfred Molina was an amazing Dr. Octopus. I think it was interesting how, you know, he started out as just this, you know, and, you know, ultimately ended up No Way Home, where he started out as this doctor, this character who wants to do good. He's, you know, he's out there trying to do the best he can, but then just through some unfortunate accident, something happens and it ends up turning him into a villain. And, you know, I don't think it's till, if I remember right, till towards the end of the, you know, right at the end of the movie where he kind of snaps back. But I think just Alfred Molina did great. I think you got the progression with Peter and Mary Jane. And just the whole thing. I think it really kicked it up a solid notch. You didn't have to worry about all that origin baggage that you had in the first one. You know, you didn't have, you know, teenage, what the hell's his name? Flash Thompson in the first one. Big, muscular, why can't I think of his name? Dungeons and Dragons guy. He plays Deathstroke in the DC movies. I don't know. I've got none. I can't think of his name. He's a big, well-known. Oh, Joe Manganiello is Flash Thompson in the original Spider-Man. And he looks like he's 30 years old, even though he's supposed to be like 17 or whatever. Anyway, I forgot how I got on that, but yeah, just good stuff all around. It's just a nice solid, you know, just a solid superhero movie.
That's my number three also. You know, much of the points you brought up, I think only having Dr. Octopus in the movie definitely was a strong point as your villain, just because it gives a much more cleaner, tighter movie. You know, Spider-Man, the emotional struggles he has of trying to have it all. And, you know, again, Toby's not at his strongest here, but I think the whole movie does. I would say the reason why these two Spider-Man movies, like the first two, work with Tobey Maguire, the villains were very well cast. The other cast is okay, but really I feel it's Sam Raimi's understanding of the movies, the franchise, the characters that make the whole thing shine. He captures the charm, the feel, the understanding, the grander than life aspect of everything on there. So that's why I feel Spider-Man 2 and 1 both do as amazing. 3 suffers because that's where the studio interference just got over the top, that there was no way Raimi could make a successful movie from that standpoint.
Accurate.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's see if our number 2s are the same.
See, and this is where it gets a little muddy for me. I think I'm going to go with the way that I think it's going to play out, you know, 6 months from now. And I'm going to go with No Way Home for my number 2 movie. Yeah, I'm just going to say that because we just spent 45 minutes talking about it, but it was just a good movie. It's one, I think I need to see it again. I've only seen it the one time. I do think I need to see it again to fully kind of digest it, you know, and then let it just kind of sit and stew for a bit before it ultimately, you know, I can make that ultimate decision. But I think for now, I think that's going to go to my number 2 slot.
I have it in my number 2 slot. But I have it in the number 2 slot with an asterisk, which calls back to my earlier point. This is the number 2 Spider-Man movie, but only because all the other previous movies helped make this movie what it was. I feel that this is the culmination of almost, you know, 20 years worth of Spider-Man movies. And that's why this movie, I think, clicked, because it found a way brilliantly to tie it all together. But I think that if you didn't have those other Spider-Man movies, I'm sure they would have found a different plot or different way or approach. But I think using this as a way to almost kind of give the proper send-off that those other two franchises didn't have is what makes it as good as it is. So yeah, No Way Home's my number 2.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. I think it's amazing how they could wrap up, yeah, 3 different franchises with one, you know, 2.5 hour movie and not having it be this big, long, over complex 4 hour thing. With that being said, my number 1 obviously is Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, how we went through all the Spider-Man movies, what could possibly be the number 1?
Crazy Town. I do think it's interesting too. I think it's worth noting that the two basic, our number 1 and number 2 are fairly similar movies. I mean, they're both kind of about the multiverse and about different Spider-Mans. For me, I think Into the Spider-Verse, it's a hell of a fun movie. It's the animation style is amazing. And, you know, I can't remember if we did a review episode for it way back when it first came out or not.
We did.
You can go back and listen to me. I mean, it's one that I'll watch now. Like, I mean, even just the memory of sitting there in the theater and watching, you know, when, but you know, towards the end of the movie, the climactic battle and the Kingpin's, you know, getting ready to take out, you know, Miles Morales, and he's on the ground and my son's sitting in the seat next to me. And he's like, come on, Spider-Man, come on, Spider-Man. Like, you know, he's, you know, cheering at the movie, and it just, the whole thing is just, it's interesting. You know, I mean, you get the original Spider-Man dies and passes out, which I think was a bold choice in and of itself, is, you know, they kill Spider-Man in this movie, they do. And you get all these different Spider-Man from different universes, you know, and some of them are fairly similar to the one we know. Some of them are radically different. And it's just, it was just an amazing movie. And, you know, they had the preview trailer, you know, which showed you a little bit for the next one, which I forget what it's called now, Across the Spider-Verse, I think, part 1. But yeah, and I'm really curious to see where they take it. You know, I'd love to see more Miles Morales. I hope they bring, you know, hopefully they bring him into the Marvel Cinematic Universe or wherever they end up putting him. You know, I mean, he kind of got a brief shout out when they're like, you know, I bet you there's a black Spider-Man out there somewhere with Electro, and I forget who he was talking to.
He's talking to Andrew Garfield.
Yes. But yeah, it's just, it's an amazing movie, and it's one of those, I think, that's easy for people to kind of discount because it's an animated one, which I did at first. I remember when I first saw the trailers for it, I don't even think I'd seen the trailer. I think I just saw like, hey, they're making this animated Spider-Man movie. It's going to be released in theaters. And I was just like, you know, because up till then, you know, most of the animated outings for both DC and Marvel were just kind of like, you know, they were direct-to-video stuff. Some of them were fine, but not great. So I was like, yeah, whatever. It's going to be some animated Spider-Man movie. It's going to go to DVD 2 weeks later. And I'm, you know, rarely have I been, you know, happier to have been wrong because it's just, it's an amazing movie. And if you, for some reason, have not seen it, you need to change that now and go check it out because it's awesome.
I think what makes Into the Spider-Verse so good is the fact that it shows with the multiverse being what it is that you could have so many different people end up at the same place regardless, you know, because of just moments in their life that formed them and just how, regardless, it's still the overall spirit of it and what they learn, you know, through the whole process. You know, they do a great job with Miles Morales, giving him his own personality and his own agency. You have all the other alternate Spider-Men, which are great. And I will say the MVP of the movie, and I feel the best Spider-Man of all, is Peter B. Parker. I would love to see nothing but just a movie focused on just midlife crisis, kind of overweight Spider-Man. Just
yes, because he is all of us, or at least, you know, he's me.
It's an I am Spartacus moment. I am Peter B. Parker. But, I mean, it did a great job of just having its own feel and vibe to it, but still honoring the legacy of everything that's come before it. And, you know, it's just, I think, a great overall fun movie that doesn't take itself too seriously, unless it needs to, takes itself lightly. I mean, Christ, you got Spider-Ham in there, for Christ's sake.
Yes, and you have a bagel sound effect. I do think it's also kind of worth pointing out that as much as I was saying just earlier this podcast that, you know, you've got to credit Marvel for, you know, they're introducing the multiverse and stuff. You know, I mean, heck, Into the Spider-Verse did it, you know, what, 2-3 years ago when this came out? So, I mean, they were even ahead of the game on that. And, you know, they're like, let's make all these different Spider-Men, have them come from different universes. And who cares? We don't need to have all this set up for it. We're just going to do it.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, most our movies all came around the same area with a few different ones here and there. But, yeah, I mean, I think ultimately the Spider-Man franchise has come out strong. I think it's easy, the punching bag, you know, Spider-Man 3 and Amazing Spider-Man 2. And having rewatched them, they deserve the criticism they have. But as I said, I think that's the benefit of No Way Home, is that it does a great job of basically redeeming those movies, or at least also just acknowledging how absurd those movies were in so many different ways, you know, especially Garfield, like the worst I did had to fight was like a mechanical guy in a rhino suit. You know, it's just, it's little things like that. So,
yeah. Yes. Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. So I'd like to thank everybody for listening to this episode. Feel free to comment in either of our social media pages, which movie you feel is the best, which is the worst. I am your host, Mike Spriegel.
I am the other host, John Lundquist.
And thank you for listening.
Yes, everybody. Have a good one.